Welcome to episode 23 of the Half Point Per Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Riggs, joined once again by co-host Dalton Willey and producer Johnny Pham. Guys, it's 2 days away from Thanksgiving. By the time people are hearing this, probably a day before, or maybe even on Thanksgiving Day, for all I know, or maybe Thanksgiving is past and your food coma is gone, but it's Thanksgiving week. We'll put it that way. We've got a fun show ahead, a little bit of a less serious show. It's a little bit of a special Thanksgiving edition. We're going to go through the Thanksgiving slate. We're going to rank those games on a scale of, well, on a food scale. I'll explain when we get there. And that's going to be on a scale, and we're going to be comparing the how good the food is to how good the fantasy goodness is in that game. And a lot of other fun stuff to get to, league rules, and even more depending on our time. I'll start with you, Dalton, though, right off the top. We talked about this earlier. I told you I was going to ask you. Hope you have a good guy ready. Who is one fantasy football player you are thankful for in this crazy 2020 season?
I mean, it has to be none other than Josh Allen. I bet big on him at the start of the preseason, and I do not believe that the MVP bet is going to pay off. It's just going to be impossible to unseat Mahomes until there's some MVP fatigue for that guy. But he's delivered on the promises I made, and I hope he continues to deliver those promises into the fantasy playoffs, where he is very, very needed. I've said this before, though. Him and three other quarterbacks are currently on pace to outscore Mahomes his MVP season as far as fantasy points go. Mm-hmm. So he's just really delivered on what I was looking for and made me look like I was a little more knowledgeable than I should have been.
Johnny, any player stick out to you as a guy that you're thankful for the season they've had, you've enjoyed watching them, enjoyed spectating their seasons this year?
Oh, I would definitely say Aaron Jones. The last three games haven't been great to watch just because I feel it's just been so slow paced for him, but the very beginning of the season, first 4 weeks, was very exciting, and I just thought I hit the gold mine. I think midway through the season, he would just like disappear for a whole quarter and I would just start rage tweeting. But I think we've gotten past that.
I don't know if we'll ever get past that with Jamal Williams there, unfortunately. But for me, it's definitely, and we've talked about this guy plenty, so I won't hit on too long, but Justin Herbert, for me, he's brought Keenan Allen back from the proverbial dead before the season. I think everybody pronounced him as dead. He's made Keenan Allen what he deserves to be, a top five, top seven fantasy option every week. And Herbert himself has just been so fun to watch. I know, John, you and I were talking during those games the other day. That touchdown pass he had, I think it was kind of on the run, just on a rope into the back corner of the end zone, and Allen just caught it standing there. And was like, Jesus, man, this guy, he just has an arm.
Just threaded through like three people. I thought it was going to be a pick. I was like kind of on my phone, and then I hear Scott Hansen. He's like, Keenan Allen with a touchdown. And I was like, okay, got to see the replay on this. Did you pick him off waivers? Or like, do you remember when you picked him up?
Oh, in our league?
Yeah.
I think I picked him up. I'd have to go back and look to be sure. I think I picked him up after the Chiefs game. So after his first start, I think is when I picked him up. And I mean, I obviously wasn't expecting it to be this good, but I saw enough in that game where it was like, okay, like this guy's a legit stud. And at that point, I think the quarterback I drafted was Carson Wentz. So I had had enough of that nonsense on my team, even though he's had some good weeks since then. But I did not draft a quarterback highly. I think I'd start Carson Wentz. I started Jimmy Garoppolo, and I think against the Jets when he got hurt in the second quarter. So I had not great stuff at quarterback. So I was like, you know what? Let's take the high upside shot at this rookie. And so far, it's definitely paid off.
I'm glad you two are happy together.
We are very happy. Newsletter, like I said on Sunday, it is live. That is halfpointperpod.substack.com. We've got the waiver wire ads. Those are probably already out of date by the time you're listening to this, but you can go, obviously, just be aware for future weeks, and you can go and look. I have a couple of big picture takeaways on there for dynasty leagues, stuff to file away for redraft leagues next year. We'll be doing that kind of the rest of the way to keep those of you who are looking ahead already because your season didn't go the way you want, or you're in a dynasty league where this wasn't in your rotation of years to to be a good team. Could be a lot of different situations. We'll have some of that stuff. Maybe we'll hit on that later in the pod, depending on time. But guys, I think it's time for the Thanksgiving food scale, right? I think we got to jump right into it.
I think it's time.
All righty. Well, so the way this works is we're going to go through these three Thanksgiving games. Who do we have? They're not the best games. So I don't think any of us are going to give it a one, with one being the best. We have Steelers Ravens. We have Cowboys in Washington, and we have Houston in Detroit. Man, it just sucks that Detroit and Dallas have to play on Thanksgiving every year. The primetime game always ends up being the best game because you can put an actual real game on at that point. But anyway, so what we did is we, as a podcast, ranked five Thanksgiving dishes. Number one, mashed potatoes and gravy. That was Dalton. That was like Dalton's like number one thing. Like, that's my number one. So I'm like, all right, fine, we'll go with it. Number two, we just put meat of choice, whether it's turkey, ham, you know, dark turkey meat, smoked ham, whatever you prefer. Just think of the meat as number two. Green bean casserole, number three. Stuffing, number four. And cranberry sauce, number five. And so if you give something a mashed potatoes and gravy, that means the fantasy goodness of that game is off the charts. If you give something a cranberry sauce, that means you are not excited for the fantasy outlook of that game. We will start with probably one of the more exciting of these three from a fantasy perspective, as long as it happens, as long as COVID doesn't ruin this game. Steelers and Ravens, on a scale of mashed potatoes and gravy to cranberry sauce, where does this game rank for you guys? Johnny, we'll start with you.
I think this is kind of an easy one. I think it's just the mashed potatoes and gravy, with especially with how the backfield for the Ravens are going to shake up, and it's just going to be overall a good game to watch for prime time.
Dalton, from a fantasy goodness perspective, where does this game rank for you?
Actually, this one is a mashed potatoes for me as well. I'm very excited to watch the wide receiver core match up against the Steelers defense. I want to see if Lamar Jackson has it and can put together a complete game. Fantasy-wise, I am a little excited to maybe see Juju not play. And I say that not as somebody who wishes ill on Juju, but I want to see Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson in the lead roles, because I think there's a good shot that's the two wide receivers we're seeing in that team next year. Mm-hmm. And give us a little bit of an idea of what that could look like. And also, last offseason, I was a big Justice Hill truther, and he did not pan out. And there's almost no choice but the Ravens to give Justice Hill some touches. I wrote about
him. There's always another choice. But yes, Dalton was the one with the idea for the headline, Justice Hill back from the dead. He wrote about him a little bit on the newsletter. So even if you don't pick him up, or if you do, if you want some more info on him, Dalton, like you were going to say, go check out the newsletter this week.
Absolutely. Because he's a good player. I still think he is. I think he's better than Gus the Bus. I'm going to say that. He's at least more athletic and more skillful. Maybe Gus the Bus can get going downhill.
Yeah, but they're just very different backs. For me, I'm going to give this, I'll go smoked ham. Smoked ham is my meat of choice. So that's a two, going 1-5. And it's good. Like, it's really, really good. And I think it would be higher if Ingram and especially J.K. Dobbins were not out. That kind of took the wind out of my sails a little bit. I mentioned you got, you know, Dobbins. Obviously, with the way that backfield has gone all year, we don't know if Dobbins, if he were playing, if he would have got the bulk of the carries again next week. He was literally the fourth back in the game the other day, and I was already kind of losing my patience on Twitter in like the first quarter. I don't know if you guys saw on the podcast Twitter account. But I don't know what they're doing with him. But anyways, obviously he's out. I was excited to play him this week if he were active. So that's a bummer. And there are just a lot of COVID concerns on that Ravens defense too. So kind of puts a little bit of a damper on it for me. But you're right. I am excited for the Steelers receivers. And you know, whether or not Juju plays or not, all of those guys have been productive. I think they all had relatively good games against Dallas. They were all startable. And then you've got even Eric Ebron, who you can start, James Conner, who you're starting. The Ravens are what drags this down, though, because like, you're starting Lamar, but he's not an automatic start anymore. Like, there are teams where you can bench him. If you picked up Gus Edwards, maybe you are starting him, but you probably have better options still, or at least safer options. And then Justice Hill, complete wild card. You're starting Mark Andrews. And then, you know, just receiver is such a sad state of affairs. Dez Bryant is out there catching passes for the Ravens. Hollywood Brown had just a brutal drop in the first quarter of that game the other day. And then I think Lamar missed him on what could have been a long gain. So they just can't seem to make it work. If the Ravens were holding up their end of the bargain, this is an easy mashed potatoes and gravy. I'm just a little bit worried that they're going to do so.
I'm just curious, while we're on the subject of the Ravens wide receiver core, are we going to go back next year and do the Hollywood Brown thing again? Are we gonna get exposed and get hurt again?
Yeah, I think I'm already ready to get hurt again. I'm still a believer, and I know he's had a rough year. Some of it his fault, some of it not. Obviously, the drop the other day was brutal. The volume hasn't been there, but
I think Marvin Hall Jr. probably has more deep completions than he does.
Well, I mean, Mecole Hardman has very few, and he might even have more deep completions. It hasn't been pretty. I think he's like wide receiver 55 or 53 or something like that in half point scoring. So it's pretty bad. I don't know. I guess I don't know if I'll dive quite head first like this year, but I'll still probably draft him and maybe be in pain again next year.
Did you make him a my guy? Was he a my guy for you?
That's a great question. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think he missed the cut.
He was an honorable mention.
Yeah, he may have been an honorable mention, and he was definitely a guy that I talked to. I think maybe a sleeper. I think he was a sleeper. So I think he was like a top 30 receiver, and I felt very good about top 20. But
he's just napping. So
if he gets top 50, then that'll be great for where he's at right now. Alrighty, on to the next game. Who do we have up next here? We've got the Dallas Cowboys against the one and only Washington football team. This one's kind of a stealth, fantasy-relevant game. Dalton, I'll start with you this time. On a scale of mashed potatoes and gravy to cranberry sauce, where do you rank the fantasy goodness of the Cowboys and the Washington football team?
I'll agree with you that this is a stealth game when it comes in regard to having fantasy relevant players.
Yeah, if we're talking real football, yeah, but we're not talking real football. Oh, it's even worse. Fake football.
But fantasy goodness, it's a five. It's cranberries, and here's why.
Five?
Yeah, it's five. I don't want to watch this game. There are two players in this game that I enjoy. It's Antonio Gibson and Terry McLaurin. The entire Dallas offense is not enjoyable.
Excuse you, I just wrote like 500 words on CeeDee Lamb.
I understand. And CeeDee Lamb is getting more playing time again because they're doing three wide sets with Andy Dalton back, and that's important to his value. But from a fantasy perspective, watching the Cowboys offense operate is just it's death by a thousand needles. As somebody who owns Amari Cooper and can never start him with any sort of sense of faith, I the same issue with CeeDee Lamb, where he might make a very athletic play, but the whole time you're looking at the screen and seeing him, you know, with 2 yards of separation on his cornerback, only for his quarterback to underthrow the ball, overthrow the ball, or just throw the ball to the wrong receiver.
I just want to point out, I think you meant death by a thousand paper cuts. A thousand needles would really hurt.
A thousand needles, that's how bad this Dallas Cowboys is. No, the only thing I'm excited for is there seems to be a little budding rivalry between Trayvon Diggs and Terry McLaurin. And Terry McLaurin is the better player, and I just want him to, on national television, put Trayvon Diggs back in his place, because Trayvon Diggs was having a bad season. Terry McLaurin exposed him. Trayvon Diggs is now having a good season, and I want Terry McLaurin to come back around and just expose that he's not a great cornerback.
I am shocked that you have this game as a cranberry sauce. Johnny, where is this on the scale for you?
Not as low as Dalton, but it's at stuffing. So at four, I don't know. I just like watching the matchup between Scary Terry and CeeDee Lamb. I feel like that would be interesting to watch, and also not fantasy relevant, but the timing of the game's actually really good. Like, post food coma, you wake up from your nap, it's like 3 o'clock, kind of watch.
Yeah, the Lions game, I don't know, the Lions game for me, especially when I was a kid, was like I would wake up, maybe be out of bed for like 30 minutes, like, oh, the Lions are already on.
Yep. Great. Just on the background. But I think time slot's perfect, and that's why I got the bump to four at stuffing.
I'm surprised. I gave this game a green bean casserole, so it's a 3. And here's why. Antonio Gibson looked very good the other day, and he's continued to look good all season. Obviously, you mentioned Terry McLaurin. Always excited for that. Always excited to watch him play. And this is why I'm surprised, Dalton, it's a cranberry for you, because if you're ever going to talk yourself into Logan Thomas, like, this is a great week. So you've got maybe the Logan Thomas factor. And then I think there's three guys everyone's starting on Dallas, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, and Zeke. And there's just a lot of fantasy relevant guys that I think, outside of Terry, I think everybody else is a really wide range of outcomes. Just like green bean casserole has a wide range of outcomes, right? Like, if you don't get the consistency down pat, if it's not good consistency, you can have issues there. But if you get the right consistency, that oniony taste really gets in there. It can be pretty good.
I just want to say, you aren't allowed to tell me that I could be pouting Logan Thomas at all. And I'm not ready to do it again, because I think it was CeeDee Carter who had the tweet last week.
I can't wait to see a screenshot tweet from Dalton on Thursday with a lineup with Logan Thomas at the captain slot.
Oh, well, we're doing it. But we're not verbalizing that. But last week, there was a tweet from CeeDee Carter, and somebody tweeted him and said, did Logan Thomas retire? And he said, no, but you'll be happy to hear that all of his advanced stats are looking great, when he had one catch for 8 yards. But second in the team in air yards for like the sixth game. He was like third in targets. He's just absolutely – everything is working and the process is not, and I am so tired of that man. But – while we're on the subject of this game, I think there's a fun little Terry McLaurin game we can play here, because I think it's obvious on this podcast we are very big Terry McLaurin fans. Mm-hmm. And there's starting to be a little growing trend around Twitter between him, DK Metcalf, and AJ Brown. If you were drafting a team, which one of these receivers do you take?
I think it's DK Metcalf, but I think it's close. I think it goes Metcalf, McLaurin, and then AJ Brown. All three fantastic options, obviously. And McLaurin, if he were in a better situation, would probably not be so under the radar. I think Metcalf, just the physical traits, put his ceiling above where Terry's is as a player.
Johnny, what do you say?
I'm with Evan. I like DK more than I go DK, Terry, and then AJ Brown, just because of DK. It's like he's more than just a route runner. He can also block for the running back, because he's just a freak of nature. So I think that's what gives him the edge. What about you?
There's a play against the Niners where I think he runs a slant and Russell Wilson throws it to him. He didn't catch it, and the linebacker went to go light him up like as he was not catching it. I think it was like a bad pass or drop or whatever. And the linebacker bounced off of him, not the other way around.
You know, I think on this, I would go with Terry.
Interesting.
The main argument behind this, I think they're pretty similar in some of the more advanced stats. The mm-hmm. argument I give behind this is that Terry has no help whatsoever at all. Both those guys have better quarterbacks for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And DK definitely gets the honor of having Tyler Lockett line up next to him. Mm-hmm. I think Terry probably gets the hardest defensive assignments, because you can really pinpoint him as the only focal point of that offense. But he still is so close to those guys in so many metrics, and he forces so many missed tackles. I think he leads those three. Although yeah, AJ Brown's touchdown last week was pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, and I think AJ Brown and DK Metcalf are also both in the top five of missed tackles. So we're talking about, again, we're talking about probably three of the 10 most talented receivers in the NFL right now.
Incredibly. And I'm excited to see him more, and I hope that the Washington football team figures out their quarterback.
Apparently that could be their permanent name. It's really, really catching on in – within that franchise.
Alrighty. If I don't get it wrong, we're doing something right.
Alrighty. We've got Houston and Detroit. Last one on the list. First one on the docket. Thanksgiving Day. Where does this one rank on a scale of mashed potatoes and gravy to cranberry sauce? Johnny, you're up.
I would rank this at green bean casserole, just because the everlasting pain of not knowing if Kenny Galladay is going to play or not. And
I don't think he's going to, but we don't know that for sure, but he didn't practice on today with, you know, Tuesday, and with it being a Thursday game, that's not looking too great. Go on.
Oh, that's fun. That's good to know. I'm going to take him out of my flux now, but I think just watching. I think, is this Deshaun's first Thanksgiving game? I think that's kind of something to note. Like,
probably so, yeah.
I think that'll be fun to watch him, but I don't know. Like, could I have ranked this at 4 again, or do we have to do like different ones?
No, you can rank this wherever you want.
Oh, okay. No, I'm gonna rank this one as stuffing at 4.
I agree with you, and I'm gonna tell you why. I'm gonna make the analogy here. Because like stuffing, this game is just a little dry, right? Like, it's just a little too dry for me. It needs some gravy to make it on my plate. And the gravy in this game is Kenny Galladay playing. It's DeAndre Swift playing. And really what has to happen is, like, Deshaun Watson has to go off and have a great game for this to be like a fun game. So it needs, you know, all three of those things probably to happen to be real exciting. Because if Swift doesn't play and Galladay doesn't play and Deshaun goes off, which he probably will, well, then it, you know, it's going to be what, 31-14? Like, the Lions can't do anything against anybody without those two guys. The Panthers shut them out last week. I am not excited to watch the Lions. It's mostly their fault, because even with as bad as Houston is, I am excited to watch Deshaun. I wish I bookmarked this tweet, but he's on pace, Deshaun Watson is, for like the highest, to account for the highest percentage of his team's yards ever in NFL history. They're wow. They're pretty miserable. That basically means they have no running game, so they're pretty miserable outside of him.
Yeah, I'm actually with you guys on this. I'm a 4. This is stuffing, and I agree with everything everyone said. There is not a fun matchup on the Lions side of the ball without Swift and Galladay, who I'm pretty sure are not going to play.
Yeah, and like Hawkinson is the only guy that you're starting, I think, with any kind of confidence. Maybe Marvin Jones is a dart throw, but you know, it's a dart throw.
Well, this comes from somebody who needed just average quarterback play last week from Matthew Stafford to win his game and didn't get it. So, you know, the Panthers in the 5 games before had allowed at least 31 points, and then they managed to shut out the Lions. Matt Patricia should not have a job. He should have been pink slipped the moment he walked
out. Yeah, he got a lot of questions. I don't know if you saw the video. A lot of questions about his future. How should a head coach be judged? Do you regret maybe letting some of the veterans walk and some of that culture leaving? And so the heat is getting turned up on them a little bit.
Well, and Matt Patricia's entire strategy was to pick every New England Patriot defender off of waivers and sign them. And that's all he's done there. But no, I think the Texans probably pretty confidently win this game. It's going to be fun to see Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks, who I think have a good opportunity to blow up in the top of this game. Mm-hmm. And of course, Deshaun Watson is fun. The U's leading rusher, Duke Johnson, I'm out on him now as a good runner.
I think he looks like he's playing hurt to me, if I'm being honest. Every time he peeled himself off the turf the other day, he was grabbing his chest, his ribs, got up slow. It's like, yeah, that guy doesn't look like he should be out there today.
I didn't see enough of his game to be able to decide that, but maybe that's it, and maybe I can tout him again next time he gets the starting opportunity then.
Well, and they're also just I don't know how many backs are going to do much on that team running the ball anyway. So he does have a lot working against him there. I'm not saying he's a great back. I think you're higher on him than me in general, but at the same time, he's probably not as bad as it's been so far. But all righty, you know what? I enjoyed that food scale, and I think we're still going to be going around Christmas. That'll be around championship season. So we'll have to think of a Christmas scale, maybe like Christmas, like Christmas treats. Think of your favorite Christmas like candies between now and then, and we'll get another holiday scale coming up.
I hope we're still around by Christmas.
Okay, I don't mean literally the world. I'm like trying to, or our podcast. I was trying to in my mind quickly figure out, okay, when's the fantasy football season end? When are we gonna probably not be weekly anymore? So I had to think about that all as I was talking.
You had me worried for a moment. I was like,
yeah. The podcast is falling before Christmas.
Okay, yeah, I thought you were about to go solo on us.
No, never, 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 never. But there are a few things that maybe should be changed in fantasy football. Some league rules. We are going to get into that now. So basically, what I wanted to do is we haven't really talked about league rules very much, or like league rules we have problems with, ways to make fantasy football better, anything like that. I thought it'd be fun to each throw out, you know, maybe just one, or if you have like an honorable mention or one you just want to mention in addition to your main one, go ahead. But basically, these are just ways that we think, or rules that we think could improve fantasy football and could improve your leagues. And Dalton, do you have one off the bat you want to start us with?
I do. So I actually have two, but I'll start with this one that
I'm curious. I put two down. I'm curious if we have any overlap here.
We might, because the first one, and neither of these are about fumbles. Just so you know, the first one is something that I grow more and more adamant about the more I try to figure it out, is get rid of kickers. I think that that's just a position that makes no sense. There's just so much variance to it. If you start a kicker in a dome, I found this little nugget today. If you start a kicker in a dome, you are 80% more likely to outscore every other kicker. That's from PFF. I read a nice little article. I went to JJ Zacharyson's Twitter to find out all I could about kickers to make sure I was right on this. But there's no real consistency to them other than the fact that if they're in a dome, they do well. They're weather dependent, and then you want one in a high scoring game.
Yeah, you want one in a high scoring game, and you generally want a kicker off a team that's favored. You don't want an underdog at risk of not scoring very many points usually.
Exactly. But that's my first one. You get rid of kickers. I say you get rid of kickers and you add another flex spot, so teams who are better drafters and draft, you know,
takes some randomness out of it. I didn't include that in my list, but I do agree that getting rid of kicker and getting rid of defense too would be what I'd add to that. It would be two things I'd be all in for.
Yeah, those are two things, and then adding another skill position to reward people who do deeper research,
or go, you know, two quarterback league, go two QB and then an extra flex, and you have the same amount. Probably the point totals are pretty similar in that scenario, right? Because maybe the extra flex is a lower scoring on most weeks because your depth will be really tested there. But you also have another quarterback who's probably gonna score like what an average kicker in defense would add up to every week. So it wouldn't really, if you're a traditionalist who's like, I just gotta have my 110 to 101 score. Like, I just gotta have the scores be in that range every week. Like, there definitely are people like that, right? Who are like, I wouldn't want to play a game that's 90 to 70, like on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's fair too. And the adding another quarterback, even if you're looking for options to go somewhere, it changes up the way drafts work and just rewards people who work a little harder for it. I know not everybody's looking to be in hyper competitive leagues, but I definitely am.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Okay, so my number one thing that I'd like to see changed is, and there are options to do it with the kicker and defense already in most leagues too. This is something that there's an option for, at least on the place we play on Sleeperbot, is I would like to see it become standard across all platforms that you play two games every week. You play against your opponent, and then you play against your league's median score. So every team either has an 0-2, 1-1, or 2-0 record coming out of each week, because nothing is more frustrating than having one of the highest scoring teams and being stuck out of the playoff picture. I mean, that's just the absolute worst part about fantasy football, in my opinion, right? Like, when you have, like, I know you guys are smiling, I'm just going to say it. My wife, it's her first year playing fantasy football. We're in a very non-competitive 8-person league. Her team is by far the highest scoring team, even with Christian McCaffrey and Devontae Adams both missing a lot of time this season. But it's calmed down a little bit, but there for a while, the actual highest scoring team in the league was the team that played her every week, basically. If you took that average, it was ridiculous, and it's still pretty ridiculous. So just examples like that, it would just help take a lot of the frustration. Like, doesn't it just suck if you're the second highest scoring person or even the third highest scoring person in your league that week, but you get a loss and you just get a little extra to your point total, but doesn't really help you that much because you play the second highest scoring team? I think that could just really, it's just a fairer way to do it, quite frankly.
I agree. I think that's something that just makes it more interesting too. Mm-hmm. It adds a little bit of a factor of skill, and everybody feels a little better about where they stand as far as points per game goes, and their real league standing feels a little more closer to the reflection of everybody's successes.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, fantasy football, it's supposed to be fun. And it's just no fun if your team is actually legitimately good and you've just had terrible luck all season. And if you don't want to make it where you have the two games a week, you don't want to offend your sensibilities with everybody having like 14 and 12 records at the end of the season. Another thing that, and I don't know if you can actually physically do this on platforms, you might have to do some manual adjusting, but a suggestion that I've seen that I actually like is the top two scoring teams in your league get automatic bids to the playoffs, which, I mean, it's kind of a different way of rewarding those teams who are the high scoring teams.
Yeah, and that's another good way to do it too. I like that as well.
Mm-hmm. So you said you had a second one, Dalton. You didn't already mention it, did you, or do you still have it on the docket?
No, I haven't mentioned it. And honestly, I almost forgot about this because I've just done it in leagues now for 2, maybe 3 years. But having FAB as the way waivers work, I know there are still leagues that let pickups go by. It's a rolling pickup system where you get a number between 1 and 12. I can't really tell you what decides who gets what pickup in what order. I know part of it depends on who won that week. It's just silly.
Yeah, a lot of times it's reverse standings, and depending on your league, if you use your priority the week before, then you're bumped down to the bottom, and it's a whole weird thing depending on your format.
And I just prefer FAB. It gives everybody a good opportunity. It also means I know in reverse standing leagues where the waivers work that way, you sometimes end up with one of the worst teams ends up almost making a playoff run just because they got the priority picks in the early part of the season.
Yeah,
they're maybe lose your first 2 or 3 games to get the priorities if you don't put it together.
For sure. And it's funny you say that because that's why I was going to say it. It's like in leagues where that is the way waivers are done, you have situations where teams outside of the playoffs, maybe one or two of them, it's not because they were one of the highest scoring teams, they're the best teams. It's because they had first priority in all the big weeks.
Yep. And that I don't like that. FAB makes it an element of strategy. Sometimes you misuse your FAB and you bid on guys like, I don't know, D'Ernest Johnson, and you regret it. But it adds an element of strategy to it, makes the game a little more fun. It makes waivers more fun to watch how they clear, too.
Yeah, for sure. It gives everybody an opportunity. It gives everybody a fair chance at the top guy on waivers. It just sucks if you're the 8th priority and you know there's no reason to even look into the top one or two guys on waivers because you know there's just no chance they're dropping that far. So I'm totally with you there. My second one, so it's not too fleshed out, but I know this is something that Scott Fishbowl leagues have done this year and are experimenting with. Basically, just a way to balance out quarterback scoring. And when I say that, I mean make it so Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Tom Brady, whatever, like that top echelon, the Josh Allen, all of those guys, make it so they are truly more valuable than the guys who are 12 through 15, give them an advantage like in real life, because that's how you make it more like real football. Is you make those top guys really valuable and you make it so, you know what, you can take Mahomes in the second round and have a very good team and not be at a disadvantage if you want to do that. And I don't know their exact rules, but I will say here's some of the rules I've heard. I think like different interceptions are minus more points. Like a pick six is like -2 for the pick, and then minus another 6 because you gave up 6 points. So like I actually heard someone talking about this on a podcast. They started Carson Wentz one week where he ended up with like -9 points in a game, and like a bad quarterback can torpedo your week like that. And I don't think that, like, for everybody, I don't think that should be like a standard, but I think that would be really cool if that were an option, like an option you could click in your league if you wanted that. I think another aspect of that scoring format was like you lose, it's very little, it's like a 10th of a point or like maybe 0.25 for incompletions. So like if your quarterback goes 21 of 42 for 250 yards, it is worse than a quarterback going 19 of 24 for 250 yards. Like you get rewarded for the actual real life better quarterback play.
That's definitely an interesting way to do it, because there is some disparities where, for instance, last season, Daniel Jones was having 30-point fantasy games. Despite the on-field effort, didn't really match the fantasy output.
I think another option to at least equalize the value of quarterback, two quarterback leagues do a good job of it because there's a lot more reward in having one of those top tier guys. But that's way more fun because it is frustrating when you start a quarterback and let's say I start Patrick Mahomes and he has an, you know, he's an all right Patrick Mahomes day, which is 300 yards and two touchdowns.
Well, like the other night against the Raiders, right? Like he throws for 325, two touchdowns, one pick, but he probably got outscored. But I'd have to look at the week 11 scores. But here, let me go look. I'll go look and see if he was outscored by anybody where it's like, yeah, no way. Keep talking.
One thing I like or would like to fix about like the QB scoring is like just make all touchdowns worth like 6 points. I think that'd be interesting.
There are like 6 point per passing touchdown leagues. I don't know if you make it all. I'm not sure how much that really changes. Because if all of the passing touchdowns are 6 points, then it just adds more scoring for those quarterbacks. Oh well, like yeah. here Taysom Hill, 24.42 fantasy points. Patrick Mahomes, 22.52. You know, because Taysom Hill rushed for two touchdowns, and that again, that's a hard one to. Without, like you said, changing the passing touchdowns to six helps, but just rushing is such a cheat code for those quarterbacks. And like Philip Rivers had 10.1 fewer points than Patrick Mahomes. I have to look up his game log, but I would guarantee you it was probably nowhere near as impressive in real football as Mahomes was the other night.
At least didn't look as good, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's pretty obvious. Let me see. Philip Rivers. Yeah, 36 for four. Oh, no, that's the first. 24 of 36, 288, three touchdowns, one pick. So that's not bad. Nothing egregious. Nothing too egregious this week. But just in general, don't you just feel like that. It's so frustrating when those streamer guys just kind of throw crap together. Their team's down by a lot. They dug themselves out of a hole, and you know they're just going to, you know, in that fourth quarter, you're looking across the matchup on your app. And you just, every time you look, oh, there's a point. There's a point. There's a point.
Well, that's what Carson Wentz did last week somebody who played against him.
Yeah, exactly.
He took his team into a horrible hole, got a garbage time touchdown, and ended up making his day look salvageable.
And Dallas Goedert will take the Dallas Goedert touchdown.
Oh, man. And meanwhile, you watch Matthew Stafford, who's putting together an equally embarrassing game, who just didn't get the garbage time opportunities.
See, like, you know that the Dallas Goedert touchdown was garbage because he did not celebrate one bit. He caught it. He just went straight back to the bench. I was like, okay, I'm done.
The Seahawks are like the king of that too. I remember Russell Wilson's biggest game last year against the Saints. They like full on no huddle, hurry up offense to score a touchdown with literally 1 second left or as time expired to lose by like 10 points or seven points. So, but yeah, anyway, I think something along those lines that kind of equals out. That kind of makes the quarterback scoring feel more realistic, give the top guys more of an advantage. And, you know, if it's in the Scott Fish Bowl, maybe eventually it'll make its way to some of these platforms because we a lot of those guys who play in those leagues work at these places. So maybe it will one day.
Well, I hope if anything's going to take it next, I'm sure Sleeper will probably be the next app to innovate with those rules, at least his recommendations.
Yep, for sure. All righty. We've got, I think, a couple minutes left before we're going to end. We'll get to everything here. Well, real quick, we'll end with start, sit, stream, like always. But before we do that, I mentioned off the top, I did a little bit of a big picture look ahead, a couple of items at the end of this newsletter. And Dalton and Johnny, if you have thoughts too, I wanted to get your thoughts or what you think on these two takes. Number one, I said CeeDee Lamb is a star. And you can go read more about it. Go look at some of the clips I included. The picture, I don't know if you guys scrolled and read through this on the newsletter. The picture of his catch is just breathtaking. It's just unbelievable, the catch he had Sunday against Minnesota. But I ended this all with saying, I think I'd take him in the second or third round. And I don't think that's where he's going to get drafted next year probably. But he's a guy kind of like McLaurin that I think I'm going to identify as a guy that I will – take as my number one receiver. I think he's already the best receiver on that team.
Amari Cooper cried. I remember specifically having a little conversation with the voice of public opinion on this podcast about CeeDee Lamb taking away Michael Gallup's upside and the voice of public opinion won, which was unfortunate. I will say I think he has star potential. My bigger issue is I need to see, one, I don't know if Dak's going to start
be able to play next season. I don't know how bad he is. If they bring him back.
Yeah, if they don't bring Dak back, it's because they have one of the top young guys. So I think regardless, he's going to have a real quarterback next year, you know, assuming health again. And as I mentioned on this newsletter, he was wide receiver 12 in those five games with Dak. And he's like 21 right now. So he's fallen off, but it's gotten a little bit better again as of late. I think if Dak plays the whole year and if he finished as a top 12 receiver, I think you probably would have to draft him that way. And I don't think you're going to have to draft him that way, but I would take him in the second or third round. I think he's going to be a little bit of a, not a post-hype sleeper, but a little bit of a sleeper just because he didn't have the gaudy numbers he could have this year.
I would have to see where he falls next year. They're definitely, I don't know if I could stomach taking him in the third, definitely maybe a fourth round guy next year where some of the value plays go. I think he's exciting. I just need to see what that offense looks like. I also, I don't know if I want Mike McCarthy there. I know I spoke pretty glowingly of him in the preseason, but I don't really like the way he's run the offense.
I also think there's a pretty good chance, whether or not it's in the offseason or during the season, sense has to prevail, logic has to prevail, and they have to trade Michael Gallup because they're not going to pay him. It would be irresponsible for them to pay him. He's not a great receiver, but pretty good. He'll get paid a decent amount on the open market. Trade him for draft picks. They clearly have a lot of needs elsewhere. Maybe he's traded before the draft, and that would obviously change, I think, how we feel about Lamb, right? If it's just Cooper and Lamb basically going in the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think Lamb's biggest value is that he plays out of the slot very often, and he's very good in the middle. So that's just another question I would have is that, at least going in, I'd want to see if they're starting to run him in outside sets or if he still maintains a predominant slot role. Those are just things I would say I would look for, not as like a knack for him saying him and an outside is not good for him because it could very well be considering how explosive and athletic and how great his route running is. But those are other things I'd like to see in the preseason.
He's just already a great route runner and does like little stuff on the route. Like the touchdown he had against Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago, I think it was TJ Watt that ended up on him. He ran like a wheel route, but he started it at it was like an out and over route, basically. And he kind of did the deal where he ran an out and he was like kind of half walking it, like, yeah, I'm just kind of running this route. And then boom, he popped it straight, no chance. And so he just does like little things like that where it's like, yeah, this guy, he just gets it. Like he's just a very good football player.
I will say he is very good. The catch also shows that. The best route running I've seen in the NFL, though, is what DK Metcalf did to Patrick Peterson on Thursday.
Tyreek Hill on that fourth down where against the Raiders the other day, where the guy couldn't even stay on his feet on like a fourth and one. So if you're just looking at him, obviously this rookie class is stacked. I think maybe Bleacher Report put out a graphic. If you had to pick one of those, you know, we talked about it, about picking a guy earlier with the second year guys. If you have to pick a rookie receiver, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, and I think it was the ESPN Bleacher Report put T. Higgins. I'm going to replace T. Higgins with Chase Claypool. So Claypool, Jefferson, and Lamb. Who are you guys picking?
You made it so much harder by getting rid of T. Higgins and adding Claypool. I'm going to... To stay logically consistent with this, I'm going to go with Justin Jefferson. And it's very similar to what I said with Terry McLaurin. Justin Jefferson, first of all, leads the league in completions of 20-plus yards, which is pretty interesting. But he also is doing it on the third highest rushing offense in the league, so he's not getting as much opportunity as those guys. Kirk Cousins is his salvageable quarterback. He's middle of the road in the NFL. I'm not going to say that Justin Jefferson's being held back by his quarterback. I will say he's being held back by the play calling. And I think that he would be having a more explosive season if he were lucky enough to be playing in an offense, definitely in Pittsburgh and definitely in pre-injury Dallas. His season would probably be looking a lot better. And he really didn't get unleashed until week 3. Same thing can be said with Chase Claypool. I think it was week 4 where we really saw him, minus the one toe tap on the sideline. So I'm going to go with Justin Jefferson. But again, same with these three guys, is they're absolutely incredible. I love all three of them. They're very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's amazing that none of these three guys were the top rookie receiver drafted. or even the second. I mean, I know Judy's been okay, but Jerry Jeudy, he's made quite a few mistakes, a lot of drops this year. He's not been on the level of these three. Johnny, out of those three, who are you taking?
I'm going to go with Justin Jefferson as well. I just kind of like the system he's in rather than, I mean, Dom kind of said everything. I wanted to say just how often they're rushing and how effective he's been. I think Justin Jefferson is just going to be a solid star in the NFL.
For sure. I'm going to go with Lamb. And I said that. I said as much in the newsletter. And here's why. I think he has the potential to be the most well-rounded of any of these guys. I think he has the skill set and the ability and the size to be pretty good on the outside. And he's already one of the best three or four slot guys in the NFL right now, I think. So I think he has the most upside, most versatility to him. Maybe not the most upside overall, but just the most upside to do the most, to be the most useful as a utility guy on offense. And I just love some of the veteran stuff he's already showing.
I'm excited to see how those guys flesh out going forward. Most excited to see what quarterbacks they get paired with, because they could be guys who make young quarterbacks look a lot better on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, for as good as that class last year was, you know, we mentioned those three guys, Metcalf, Brown, McLaurin. There are some others, obviously, too. This one is even better because, you know, having Brandon Ayuk, who's been kind of in a quarterback wasteland and has been hurt this year, he's a stud. Jalen Reagor's been banged up this year. He could still pan out to be a stud. Michael Pittman, who we mentioned at the top of the waiver article, he's looking like he is going to be a pretty good, potentially pretty good NFL player. And again, that's say nothing of, I think Ruggs is talented. Jerry Jeudy, it's just completely stacked.
And Green Bay took a third string quarterback.
they love Alan Lazard so much, but okay.
The Lizard King.
Yep. Yep. Last guy here, and then we'll get to the start, stream, sit. I said don't buy into James Robinson as a future RB1. I know that I've been kind of low on him throughout the process this year, and this isn't me saying that, like, you know, don't draft him next year. He's going to be a bust, or in Dynasty, you don't have – I think you have a starting running back for now, as long as nobody else is brought in next year or two. But I kind of likened him to Chris Carson, where – you know, he's a very capable back. He actually probably catches it better than Chris Carson. He's very powerful. He runs anchor. He runs over people like Carson does. But he just doesn't have that wiggle in the open field, that acceleration, just kind of that extra oomph that, like, those elite guys have. So I don't think he's an elite player. I think he's pretty good. And I'd say his RB4 season is more about volume than the type of player he is. He's still good, but it's more about that locked-in volume. And if that goes away, it's a little less secure. So I think basically my overall point is, if you're in a dynasty league and you can get someone to pay you like he's a top 12 guy going forward, I would be selling him on that value.
Well, and there's two things you generally look for with backs. There are generational talents who you believe no matter what system they're in, they can score.
Saquon Barkley.
Mm-hmm. Even Alvin Kamara, he's not in a bad situation, but he's another guy where you feel like no matter what team he's playing on, he's probably going to get you a good amount of points.
Yep.
CMC is another one. We know factually that there's no chance that James Robinson is a generational talent. He's a good player, don't get me wrong. Chris Carson is probably a good comp. So that's the first one you look at. The second is opportunity. He has the opportunity, but the thing is, his opportunity is on a team that probably gets even worse next season, if not stays the same. They're very deep in a rebuild, and 20 touches on the Jaguars are not as valuable as 10 touches in Kansas City, for instance, because the way those touches work, he'll probably see, if he is Jake Luton — I don't know if Jake Luton is a quarterback in the future there. If he is Jake Luton,
I don't think so.
Yeah. If he is Jake Luton, a quarterback next season, though, he's going to be seeing a lot of 8-man boxes because they don't trust him, you know.
Well, and my point of him not being an elite guy is, you know, no matter the talent of somebody, the Panthers, the Saints, the Giants, you know, the Bengals, the Browns, no matter the talent of anybody else they bring in, they're not going to be better than Chubb, than Mixon, than McCaffrey, than Barkley, than Kamara. I mean, it's not inconceivable the Jags could luck into a better running back at some point next year, year after. I mean, sometimes these guys come out of nowhere. He was undrafted. And Kamara, second, third round pick. Like, it's not like you have to invest in a first round running back to find some of these very, very talented, Aaron Jones, some of these very, very talented guys.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. You're concerned that if another guy comes in and produces what he produces with that opportunity, because he's injured for a game or two, suddenly his hold on that spot's not as strong. Where with guys with a high skill to talent and touch floor, suddenly mm-hmm. withhold those positions a lot easier, and you're not as worried about their week to week eligibility to produce you RB1 numbers.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of guys with a high touch floor and a lot of talent, that's my star of the week this week. We talked about him early. I'm not going to harp on it. Terry McLaurin averaged 98 yards per game since Alex Smith has been the starting quarterback. It was 82.4 before that. So the yardage has gone up significantly since Smith has taken over. And of course, it's the Cowboys he's playing against. We saw what happened last time. Cowboys allow the second highest points per game to opposing receivers. He has a very high floor and a potential boom week. That is the best kind of outlook for any fantasy football player. Dalton, who's your star of the week this week?
My star of the week, I think this is the most exciting, especially fantasy-wise, match we have coming next week. It's the Buffalo Bills and the Chargers, and my start of the week is Keenan Allen.
That's going to be a high over-under.
It is. So there's a lot of points to be scored. Keenan Allen is so great that he gets 16 targets a game. And
he had 10 receptions for like 100-something yards at halftime the other day.
Yeah, I played against him. and it's going to be such a fun game to watch. I'm excited just to see it on paper because both defenses don't hold up to be too well. There's going to be a shootout. Keenan Allen's the prime benefactor. I could have went on the other side of the ball here and gone Stephon Diggs.
Yep.
But both those guys are going to do great. Maybe the Bills come out with a little bit of a different defense because they had the bye week, but I really don't think their defense has enough to stop Herbert as long as the play calling in Los Angeles fixes itself a little bit.
But yeah, number one, not funny, but very good if it happens. Eckler is designated to return. Don't know if he's playing this week. Hopefully he plays this week, but if he doesn't, against the Jets, what the Chargers basically just did is like, okay, like Ballage stinks. We can't run the ball. We're just going to keep throwing the whole freaking game. And that's what they did. They've blown so many leads, they were terrified of taking the air out of the ball. And they almost blew that game still. They kept close.
But, yeah, well, I don't know how the Chargers didn't just destroy the Jets. That's still a question.
Yeah, red zone flips over to that game, and I see the Chargers punter running out of the back of the end zone with 2 seconds left to cut the game to six. It's like, okay, how did the Jets come back?
How did we get here?
How is Chris Herndon scoring touchdowns in this game? But
another tight end I just don't want to talk about.
but I'm with you. An honorable mention, speaking of the Jets, is Salvin Ahmad. The Dolphins back playing the Jets. I expect the Dolphins to bounce back. Talk about a team that really cost me. It was the Dolphins the other day. I think like 90% of bettors bet on them. Really let a lot of people down. It was disappointing. And speaking of being let down, today I'm on YouTube and I'm starting to get draft like daily fantasy ads telling me to come play on a different website because it's easier. I think they realize someone found out that I stink at DraftKings now these last couple of weeks, and they're trying to bring me onto an easier platform.
Those targeted ads are coming right at you.
Yeah, I don't appreciate YouTube spying on my DraftKings account.
Financially, it knows you're in woe. Next year, I'll start getting debt management ads.
My sin of the week, Melvin Gordon. They play the Saints. We all know about that rushing defense. He had a very soft fumble at the goal line of that Dolphins-Broncos game that almost let the Dolphins come back and score a touchdown with Fitzpatrick at the helm. He had 2 touchdowns, so like he played well. He and Lindsey basically had the same yards and same carries. So they're getting pretty much the same work, playing a good defense. So 2 guys against the Saints that I don't know if I can trust fully basically equals 0 guys I want to start out of that backfield.
God, how nice would it be to have the Saints defense against the Broncos? I hate Drew Lock. No, that's a good one. Pretty routine, and some people might be chasing the points after what Melvin Gordon did last week, but I would agree with that. Their opportunity is pretty similar. Gordon just had a couple of big runs. I do think Gordon had 4 of the 5 goal line carries, which is something to watch for. My sit of the week, I stole this from Evan. It's the Bengals wide receiver core.
Poor Joe Burrow, and yeah, the Bengals are a wasteland from here forward, it kind of seems like.
Ryan Finley, he's not much. We saw him in action last year. James Bradberry probably isn't going to shadow anybody here. AJ Green could get covered by a high schooler and still not catch it with his stone hands. Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins are, you know, they're probably just going to be floor plays at your flex from going forward here. You know, they'll get 7 or 8 targets a game, but the value of those targets, I don't think are going to be what they could have been with Joe. Yep. And that offense isn't going to move. It's just, it was bad offensively with Joe.
Yeah.
Now
and
Ryan Finley behind that line, it's really bad.
And obviously Mixon's still not back. And at this point with Burrow now out, season completely lost. I mean, it's not like they're making the playoffs, but at least with Burrow, you have some incentive to bring Mixon back and to keep trying to put together a functional offense. Now it's like, who cares? Just keep losing.
Yeah, and I'm going to get this out before you do because it looked like I've been chasing you. My stream of the week is playing the Falcons. I'm sure Evan's stream of the week might be playing the Falcons. It's Derek Carr.
It's funny. I almost went with Derek Carr. I'll let you talk, and I'll tell you why I didn't go with Derek Carr.
Well, I wanted to get ahead of that because we've been targeting that matchup so frequently.
We've had a lot of the same streams, so I can see why you would have thought that.
But Derek Carr, he did well against a good Chiefs offense. Seems as if he found a wide receiver one in Nelson Agholor.
Yeah.
Henry Ruggs makes Derek Carr better on the field because he stretches the field. Josh Jacobs is doing well in the run game. Their offensive line is ranked, I think it's 6th or 7th in the league in pass protection. And we know the only time Derek Carr had a good season, I think he almost had an MVP season that year.
He was the MVP favorite and he broke his back.
Yep, was behind that offensive line. And then he's Darren Waller. The Falcons let Taysom Hill look like a good passer, and I would put money that Derek Carr is a better passer than Taysom Hill.
yeah, probably.
So he'll probably have a good game, and I think that their defense at least hopefully puts up a fight against the Falcons, and the Falcons score some points this time. If Julio plays, it's a better option than if not.
So here's why I got away from Carr. This just seems like the most Derek Carr thing to do would be to completely lay an egg against in a dream matchup after playing maybe the best game of his life. I mean, he played very, very well against the Chiefs. And he played well the first time, but this time was much better. It wasn't like 2 50-plus-yard plays inflated his day like last time. He was making great throws all over the place. So that's number one. A little bit scared to fully trust in the Derek Carr after that. And number two, you look at his game log, and he's been very good this year. But boy, he's sure thrown up some duds. But before the Chiefs game, he hadn't topped 165 passing yards for 3 straight weeks. So he's been a little up and down. There's been some games where it's kind of looked like old Derek Carr still this year, like. The Chargers wasn't good. I know that Browns game was in the rain, but he still left a little to be desired in that game as well. So I was a little bit scared to dive right in. I figured you would because we've been targeting that Falcons matchup, like you said. I went with Taysom Hill. Talk about a guy I was scared to death of last week. Still a little scared this week, but Sean Payton's game plan was just so good last week. We had a lot of motion, made all the throwing stuff pretty easy. I think we learned we don't really want Taysom Hill throwing it deep because they're just all arm punts when they're 40 yards or more down the field.
Emmanuel Sanders caught it, man.
he did, but against a better defense, that probably is not happening. But the thing is if you feel okay with the intermediate passing stuff, which with Sean Payton, with Michael Thomas, and, you know, Kamara didn't have a catch for the first time in his career, but you'd expect him to get involved again in the passing game. You feel like he has a okay enough floor in the passing game, and then the rushing upside is just there. You know, he rushes for, I think, 2 touchdowns. Sean Payton already wants to use him in the red zone every time when he's not the starting quarterback. So I would expect that when they're in the red zone, he's going to be a primary option to run the ball. So he's a guy, you know, I'm not really scared of that Broncos defense. I don't really care what happened last week against the Dolphins. I'm firing him up as a top 12 play this week.
I just want to say, and, you know, the Taysom Hill call looked like it worked out for the Saints, and that's good and fine and everything. But they denied us Jameis Winston on TV. They denied us a Jameis Winston game. They denied us two more weeks of Jameis Winston. You want to talk about a Christmas present? That's an early Christmas present. It's two more weeks of Jameis Winston. And whatever, Sean Payton, I get it. You paid the guy $20 million, and your team is so cap-strapped that you're worried that Jameis Winston might hit some more of his incentives as he plays on the field. But, man, why did you sign Jameis Winston? Why wouldn't you have let him walk somewhere else so maybe we get to see him in a starting spot? Because I would have loved to see him play in Denver or somebody somewhere else this season.
I do wonder. I do wonder when he signed if he knew that he was actually the third string guy, or if he was told, yeah, if something happens to Breeze, you'll start. I'm a little curious about that. You're right. It's unfortunate. Feel a little bad for him because that was kind of his chance to earn himself a contract next year. But you know what? Jameis has been like a full-on cranberry sauce, maybe stuffing for the first couple of years of his career. So I think that's a good way to end it. End it off Thanksgiving note. Too bad it wasn't like a mashed potatoes and gravy note, but still not terrible. Could be worse. Stuffing could be worse. That's going to do it for episode 23 of the Half Point Per Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Half Point Per Pod. I think we're doing a live stream this Sunday. We haven't discussed. I don't know what everybody's holiday plans are, but we'll see about Sunday. If we don't have a live stream, we'll put something up on Twitter. But we may still have a live stream. We'll let you guys know. And hope everybody enjoys their Thanksgiving, enjoys watching the games, and is able to have a safe and healthy Thanksgiving with their families. And in the meantime, our show is available Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere else you listen to your podcast. And we will talk to you guys very soon.